I know what I'll lead with. Ooh, baby, I like it raw. Ooh, baby, I like it raw. PG movie. PG movie.
Yeah, the soundtrack was definitely a standout part of my experience, though eyebrow raising at times. But Old Dirty Bastard in a kids movie, I'm fine with that.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I enjoyed all of it, but it was just like we had no diggity. And Shimmy Shimmy Ya in the same kids movie, and I was just like, are these songs just so watered down now that we just the actual meat? But I'm still like ODB yelling, "Ooh, baby, I like it raw." I'm just like, come on, that's a classic. But like, no, come on, PG. How does this get rated a PG based off the song choices alone? And they were swearing. I don't know. I just not like a like, you know. I mean, I took my kids to it, so it's like whatever. And then it come out being like, "Dad, I like it raw," you know. So it's not like that resonated with them or something. And the other one was just like, "No, I think I'll bag it up."
So my question though is, did they release the soundtrack? Is there a licensed soundtrack for this movie? Okay, because that makes more sense. Because I was like, the lyrics go past this point, then you can't sell this to kids anymore.
Well, so here's the thing. So now what they do so that you don't. Because here's what I discovered, because I wanted to see the playlist and see like the full thing. What they did, what Paramount Pictures did, is they have an official like Spotify profile, and they have it on a I think like Amazon as well. Just those two for some reason. They were just like, nah, fuck all the other streamings. And then they released an official playlist for the song with their own picture of like the from the movie and whatnot. But it was just an official playlist because fuck, you know, getting the rights and releasing all that. No, they just did the official score with Reznor and Atticus. So that's all they released was the official score, which I was like, I don't even know if you can hear the score with all the other music going on. Like, I kind of listened to it just out of curiosity. It was just like, oh, this is really not ringing any bells in the movie. Like, I was just like, I'm not there. I'm not being transported with a score. So, but yeah, just, I don't know. I thought that was kind of like a interesting, but like weird thing of like, no, this is some, you know, like big puns there too. I'm not a player. I just crush a lot. Like, just everything is just like, okay. All right. Kids movie stuff, huh? Okay. All right.
Well, and then you have Annie up getting the needle dropped twice, and that's literally just a song about mugging people, and it works in the movie. I like the tone the soundtrack sets.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, it definitely amps you up for the movie, you know?
I mean, when they used Run DMC for the trailer for the last live-action movie, like, I remember how much I was like, you know, this actually kind of makes me want to go back and listen to some like 90s and 80s hip hop, because it is kind of a transportive vibe. It does kind of get you in a different. And then the tone of this movie fit it pretty well. So that I didn't have any real problem with. It was just funny when in my head I'm completing the end of some of these verses and going like, yeah you got to start having the characters start talking really loud right about now. You got to, you know, okay, good, cool.
Yeah. Oh yeah, the playlist definitely had censored songs, like most of them, not all of them.
Yeah,
like DMX was not censored. I was like, okay, this one missed the censoring. The rest were pretty good. This one we just were like, nah, just go full blown. So, but yeah, I mean, I agree. The music. I think that's something, you know, I'm going to accredit Jeff Rowe, one of the directors, with that, because I'm kind of become a huge fan of his stuff. I think he's really good about how he uses music in like his stuff to like just really elevate the scenes and the emotions and everything like that. So, so you want to dive into it?
I think that's a sign that it's time to Let's Movie. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Let's Movie. I am Dustin. Today I am joined by Justin.
Welcome, everybody. Just a couple of permanent teenagers here to talk about a kids movie. Two grown adults, but apparently locked in some sort of time warp where we have not aged out of watching ninjas kick people.
My favorite thing about Ninja Turtles is it's more like Kung Fu Turtles. It's less ninja, more Kung Fu. But, you know, just Teenage Mutant Kung Fu Turtles, while still catchy, doesn't have the same, you know, place in my heart as Ninja Turtles. So
they did have that little cute nod to the British title in there where April calls them Mutant Hero Turtles. And I was like, oh, that's cute. They're not. They didn't have that joke that's really exhausting in these where they have the characters like talk about how stupid the name is of something.
Yes, yeah.
I thought they were going to do that, and they fortunately backed off the gas. And like, hey, that's respectful of your audience who's tired of that joke.
Well, and also it's just like, hey, this property is older and more successful than, oh, I don't know, 90% of you assholes that have worked on some of these movies. So maybe like, shut up or don't work on a movie you don't have any interest in. So like those last live action ones. So, yeah, I hate that joke. And I'm just like, oh, let's make fun of the name. No, fuck you. The name is what sold this for so long. Okay.
We're workshopping it, you know, just kicking around some ideas.
Do you remember the failed TMNT from 2000 and I think 7? Yeah, well, that one failed because they didn't use the full fucking name. Also, it was a shit movie and it had bad CG. But other than that, this movie, though, doing good. Got good graphics. It's sitting at 89 mil domestically. Sitting on 119 worldwide. So not the rest of the world not pulling their weight. That's for damn sure. And I believe the budget... What's the budget on this motherfucking thing? 20... No, that's not it. Shit. Yeah, I just had this fucking budget thing. Sorry, everyone. This is bad audio.
To clarify for everyone while you search for that, we are talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem, which I actually have to have open on my screen right now to remember exactly what combination of M words the title is, because I kept going, I was like, is Mutant Madness, Mutant Mania? And I completely blanked on Mayhem. But yeah, really? it's this year's Ninja Turtles release. Because, I mean, if you say the Ninja Turtles movie, that now describes 5, 6 films. More than that, 7. I think. 7. Jesus.
Let's see, there's 5 live action, 1 CG, this CG, and then the Netflix one. No, 8. I'm sorry, 8. Wow. Although I do think there's a TV movie that I would technically count, so I would go even up to 9.
Oh, I wasn't even thinking of the Rise one for Netflix, but yeah, I guess that's that technically another one.
Yeah, I count it. It's almost the same runtime as this movie.
We're not counting the direct-to-video stuff, because then you get into the Batman versus the Ninja Turtles movie that came out.
I'm not counting that piece of shit.
Exactly, yeah. Leave those off the table, direct-to-video.
That doesn't count. Any crossover doesn't count. but no, this movie, directed by Jeff Rowe and Spears, written by Seth Rogen, who produced it, and Evan Goldberg, those two can't not work with each other. Jeff Rowe and then 2 other people, starring a bunch of children, honestly, for the first time ever as the voices, because the Ninja Turtles are... actually, like, I mean, they're billed as teenagers, but they do come off like middle schoolers, in my opinion, but whatever. Can't win every battle. And then a huge, you know, just group of people that I assume Seth Rogen likes or has definitely worked with or wanted to work with, like Ice Cube and Jackie Chan, who voices Splinter and is just Jackie Chan as Splinter. And I will just get my biggest gripe out of the way with this movie is that once again, they have made Splinter completely useless to the story, to the turtle, everything. Like, he is just here to make out with a cockroach at the end. That's it, you know?
Which is funny. When we get into the movie, I think we'll talk more about it. But I actually kind of disagree on that point on his role in this movie. But we'll get around to it, but
okay, so I already know where you're going to go with it. I just mean more of his origin is useless to the
movie. Yeah. It's a weird choice for the origin for sure.
Like it's even weirder than the rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and that one wasn't great either, but at least it was like, okay, well, I mean, he's got a kung fu background. He's just fat and lazy or whatever. Okay, whatever. But this one is just like, I'm a rat man. Okay. Like, he's like, what do you bring to the table, rat man? That's basically it, you know? Like, we watched 90s re-release Shaw Brother films and learned kung fu and then became ninjas. Yeah.
By the way, speaking of that sequence, I really hope there's at least a handful of kids that go back and watch some of those movies based on it. Because as they were doing that little montage, it was making me go like, shit, I kind of want to go home and just watch some old Shaw Brothers movies because they were very, very fun clips.
Yeah, I mean, most of them were good until they started mixing in like bad internet videos, too. I was like, please don't do
that.
Just don't. Yeah. In any movie, and I know, and again, I'm going to say that's probably the director because he did that with the Mitchells vs. the Machines, too. Anytime they mix, like, an internet video in, I'm just like, don't do that. I don't come to the movies to internet, okay? Like, don't do that. It's so annoying.
It also dates your movie from your reality.
Exactly, yeah.
And this movie had a... that was one thing, kind of like as an overview of some of the reaction was... To get the kids to talk like kids, they do have a handful of moments where they're using slang where I'm like, well, by the end of the year, nobody will know what that means anymore because slang doesn't hang around the same way that it did when, like, we had what's the kid from Terminator 2 dropping Bart Simpson style lines. Like that slang, you still kind of like understand the context. There were a handful of ones where I was like, oh, I just learned what that word meant last week. That's not sticking around. And anytime you put an internet video, anything you think is viral, you're immediately setting your movie up to be like, specifically, this came out in 2003. We're very, very sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, just slang moves as fast as the internet now. So, but. And the kids are just coming up with new shit all the time because they're kids and they got nothing better to do. They just don't want to be anything like adults. Except for they want to be adults. They just don't want to be anything like adults. And then when you become adult, you're just like, fuck, man, this sucks. Just stay the goddamn kid. I'm just like my goddamn parents and I fucking hate teenagers. Why do they got to be so fucking noisy? Anyway, you know, that's just my old man rant of just like, yeah, you just blink and then you're just like, oh, I get it. Teenagers are the worst.
You're starting to stretch the permanent teenager thing, man. We got to get back on. Got to get back on topic.
I'm annoying, so it works. If it's,
I guess complaining about things is very teenagery. So that'll stick with it.
This movie starts with Baxter Stockman working out of, I assume, his mom's basement. I don't know. He obviously has a giant fly child in a crib.
this like, was surprising to me because I didn't know where they were going. With the Baxter Stockman thing, I assumed he was going to be the fly villain. I didn't realize we were going to have baby fly, which was cute. And played by Giancarlo Esposito, the first of many wasted, highly talented actors who are brought in to do a scene and then told they can like pick up their check.
I mean, if they're not just collecting a few cents on the back end or if they didn't do it as a favor. So that's the problem is like, Seth Rogen's pulling some favors here, like, you know, to keep the budget down. That's the thing. I'm looking at all these names and I guarantee they're working at rate. You know, they're not using their name to really pull extra putting their name on this isn't going to pull in extra asses and seats because it's for kids. So it's like, you know, they do it mostly for a favor and for fun. Probably like Ice Cube is probably the only person that didn't do that, you know, just based on the you know, amount of scene time and just recognize, you know, how recognizable his voice is and whatnot. Even though I had no fucking idea it was him until the
credits. That was what I was about to say. There were a couple voices I had trouble picking out, and I did not realize it was him until the end credits rolled.
Yeah, well, I mean, we can run through them real quick. Because, I mean, like, Maya Rudolph, I was like, okay, I did not hear your voice in anything, but okay. Rose Byrne, who did Leatherhead, complete waste of a character and of a voice, and yep. clearly just because she was working with Seth Rogen and something else, that Plutonic show or whatever.
Oh, also Neighbors with Zac Efron and Chloe Grace Moretz.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she did two movies with him.
And then Natasha from What We Do in the Shadows.
Mm-hmm. Playing a bat, which was like, oh, I get it.
Oh, I see. It's cute. I have to know everything that's going on in her career to get it. Ice Cube, Superfly, Paul Rudd, Mondo Gecko. You know he did that as just a straight-up favor.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Post Malone, Ray Filet.
Which that I did not clock at all.
No,
for
not
obvious
at all.
Reasons, but
and
yeah.
And just shouldn't have been. And then Hannibal Buress as Genghis Frog, which I was like, did he talk? I didn't even remember
right.
him talking. And then Mr. Beast has a voice in here. He gets top billing over almost everyone else remaining in the movie for Times Square Guy.
Because he's the pull name. I'm assuming he did a video on like, hey, I'm going in to record the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Because that's like the best promotion you could possibly do. I wonder if Mr. Beast Burger is doing a tie-in burger for this. Like,
no, because most of the places got shut down and sued, I think.
We still have one. We still have one in here in Chattanooga, yeah.
They're terrible.
I'm sure.
They're fucking, it's like microwaved frozen food.
Yeah, so that doesn't fucking
spoil. I tried it twice. The first time I was like, okay, you're new. Maybe you got some like learning curve. Second time I was like, okay, somehow you got worse. I don't know. Places open longer and gets worse at what it does, but you nailed it. You fucking nailed it.
We've got the candy bars in the Walmart, the Mr. Beast candy bars.
I tried those shits too. I was just out of curiosity. I didn't even know it was him until he showed up. I was like, oh, a new candy bar. And then he showed up. I was like, oh, what the fuck? I was like, fuck. And I tried him. I was like, fuck this shit. I hate this guy. Why is he in everything? It's so sweet, Dustin. Why? I don't care. Okay, I don't believe it. I'm such a skeptic. I don't believe he's a nice guy. I don't. I think he's a monster inside, and we're gonna find out he's just like Jared from Subway. There you go. I said it.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. But anyway, back to Baxter Stockman. It's not the first time that Baxter Stockman hasn't actually turned into the fly. But, you know, it was interesting that he was just like, I will raise you, baby fly.
I really loved his performance as Baxter Stockman for the few seconds he was on screen. I actually thought it was one of the best voices in the movie just because he was playing like the mad scientist in such a like fun, nerdy way where he's like, I was bullied as a child and I related more with the animals I experimented on. It's like, oh, this is cute.
Terrible to animals too.
Yeah.
Okay. And then TCRI busts in and they're just like, we're here for your shit. And apparently I guess at this point it's alluded that he dies somehow. I don't know.
Yeah.
Either in the explosion or something. And so but the baby fly goes around and beats everyone's asses. And then someone shoots some gas, and the house blows up. And then, like, one guy that we see later on is just like, everything's fucked. And they're just like, get all this shit. And so they just get all the shit, which seemed to just be a bunch of household chemicals that he was just, like, randomly dumping into beakers and shit. And he somehow created ooze. So
they had a weird line where they have their, like, blue anti-mutant guns. And they're like, yeah, we have our anti-mutant guns. And they're all charged up. And then they go in. They start, you know, putting hands on Baxter Stockman, and then the fly starts flying, and it was like, don't shoot, we need it alive. And I was like, then why did you bring the guns that specifically work on mutants? I'm confused by that plan. I don't know what the point was.
And if you don't know how to make the mutants, how do you have anti-mutagen?
That too?
You know, that's something I just realized just now. I was like, wait a minute, what the fuck? How did they have those fucking guns already?
I mean, kind of, it's who, because that's something, for one, they say they've made an actual mutant, and it's like, all right, that's a weird thing, because it's both suggests that they know the physiology of mutants, but also they have never seen a real one. It's not really important. We'll probably hit upon it later, this kind of like sloppiness in certain parts of the writing, but I would assume the guns are because of who is running the company, which was something I was very happy they didn't completely blow their load on on what they're setting up with that.
Yeah. But I don't know. And then so then we're out. It flashes forward. It goes 15 years forward. Horrible font, by the way, on the 15 years forward. I was like, what is this? What are you doing?
Where it's all ninja, the ninja star things. It wasn't in the scratchy style, like the title. The I did think that was distracting.
Rest of the movie? Yeah.
Right,
like,
yeah.
What the fuck is this shit? I was like,
yeah.
And the turtles are, they got a mission. Leonardo's giving them the mission. It's to steal a bunch of food and stuff. They are Teenage Mutant Ninja shoplifters.
Yep.
So, which I was like,
I kind of like that.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. Like, how the fuck else are they living? They don't have money, you know?
Yeah, because they have the scene in the live action movie where they, like, pay for a pizza and, like, the guy comes up to the manhole cover and they, like, slip him a 20 or whatever. And that was always like, ah, it's cute. It's a 90s film. It feels like of that tone. But for this movie, that's kind of trying to do something not necessarily more realistic, but certainly something a little more considered as to how they live. I like the idea of like, yeah, no, they're just stealing and they're not even like doing the like, oh, we'll leave the money on the counter kind of thing. It's like, nope, they're just surviving.
Yep, that's it. And then the other three start making fun of Leonardo for his huge speech, and they go over the shopping list, and I love the emphasis on the party size Doritos. But like, that's one of many product placements that the film is gonna have. I'll try to remember the others, but like that one was the major first one, but there were definitely other ones where I was like, get a lot of product placement paying for this movie. So
the pizza company wasn't determined though, right?
No, that was well. I mean, they're going with New York pizza, so you don't want to just like have New York hate your fucking movie. So you can't.
I mean, they did in the live action one. It was, I'm pretty sure, literally a Domino's pizza when he's doing the weird erotic. Cheese. The one with Tony Shalhoub.
I don't know who that is. Are we talking the good live action ones?
No,
third one.
No.
The second one.
The Michael Bay Platinum Dooms one.
Michael Bay one. Oh yeah. Well, I mean, if it was the sequel bombed, and there you go. Don't piss off New York with your pizza choices of being Domino's. So, but also those movies were hot trash. So
sure,
I don't even count them. Like I barely count them just because I like to relish in the failure of the second one, and that's it.
Michael Bay made an Xbox turn into a Transformer in the first movie. So when it comes to product placement, he is going to be as shameless as possible. Oh, Seth Rogen and probably was like, there are a handful of things that if we do them, we will be like mocked for it. So if we avoid that, then we won't have that piled on top of other criticisms people might have of our movie.
Well, I'm about to mock him for Cool Ranch Doritos. Yeah. First of all, not my go-to Dorito. Second of all, too much emphasis on the party size. but then they do their little thing. They steal shit, and they get their shopping done, and they decide to, like, Leo's ready to go home, and they're like, oh, let's go fuck around some more. And I'm trying to think, this is when they go see Ferris Bueller.
Ferris Bueller. Live-action Ferris Bueller. One of many times they use live action elements in an animated film.
Yeah. Which, again, I think that's a Jeff Rowe thing because he did a similar thing in The Mitchells as well, which is a great movie. I'm going to keep bringing it up because I actually generally like that movie a lot more than this movie, but I don't think this movie's bad per se or anything like that. So.
I didn't see Mitchells versus the Machines, but I kept hearing people praising it, so maybe when I have to go back.
It was my favorite movie of the year. It got robbed by Encanto. Yeah, 100%. Like Encanto, like if you watch this Mitchells and then Encanto, you'll be like, why the fuck did we give it to Encanto? Is this like a favor to Disney or something or what? Because no, like literally, like the grandma learned not to be an asshole. That's that won the Oscar. Okay. I mean, not this one about the huge family dynamic, leaving for college, you know, coming together. And understanding who we are and in our role in our family and just a ton of other things I don't want to spoil for you now, which is why I started going into a bad loop there because I was like, no, spoiler. but yeah, it's like one of my favorite movies of that year, if not the my favorite movie of the year, and my kids have watched it a dozen times in like a month alone, several months of that, and I never get tired of it. I just actually, it's one of those few movies where I could just keep watching it and
no shit.
Feel like, yeah.
Was that
usually
Netflix
the kid
exclusive?
Movies, I become numb to them, and I'm just like, no, I can just, you know, I can block them out. But that one, like, if my kids start watching, I just get sucked in, where I'm just, oh shit, what was I doing? Watching this movie again, so.
Did that get a theatrical release, or was that a streaming exclusive? Because I remember that being on Netflix.
No, it got a small window of release that they could get it in Oscar contention. So, but
oh,
mostly,
I get you.
Yeah,
gotcha, so. Gotcha. Yeah, so they're watching Ferris Bueller, and we get some of the like the dialogue, the kids riffing, which I don't know. I know that there was some improv that was used. I read a little bit because I was interested in how they recorded these kids, because they sound. I'll say this right up front, like, I think they sound like really natural. I liked the kids' performances a lot. Some of them are like very experienced at this. The kid who plays Leonardo was Gumball Watterson on that Cartoon Network Gumball show.
That explains.
Which I never watched, but I'm familiar enough with the clips to know that, like, yeah, he's got, he has honed some like real comic timing from being on that show. Like, he was one of those like kids doing voice acting from around that time that actually did a good job with what he was doing. So now he's older, his voice, because the kids, the interesting thing about the Turtles, they have kind of like a range of ages, because Leonardo feels older, and then is it Donatello sounds like, yeah, the middle school thing where he sounds like a genuine child.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's like they are all kind of, I mean, they're all high school students is what the movie tells us. But it definitely has that like feel of, you know, there's like a couple years in between this one and that one and whatnot. You know, like Mikey is like the tiniest one, and they just have like this different size that I think Rise of the TMNT really introduced. Like, and it made sense for them all not to be exactly the same, and I think that just kind of like worked, and that probably helped here, where it was like, oh, okay, you know, we can make them a little different. I like it. I'm not in love with Donnie wearing glasses all the time, because I'm just like, man, that shit would fall off his weird fucking shaped head. But okay, but yeah, I mean, it's just. I didn't realize that was the Gumball kid. And that explains that he's, yeah, that's actually one of those shows where it's like, nah, you're definitely not just for children. So
yeah, that regular show kind of window where it's like, sometimes they push it to the point where, are kids even going to understand what this joke is?
Yeah, well, I think, and just the sheer level of anime references they make on that show, we're just like, no kid's fucking getting this. But then my son's sitting there just like, this is cool. I'm just like, well, wait till you see the shit it's based off of. So, yeah. And so they've stolen, they've watched Ferris Bueller. They've actually left before the film's over because they're on the parade, and they're just like, all right, let's go. Cause they're depressed because they want the high school experience. And, they know that, that's not going to happen. Mostly because their father, who they come home to, and he's just like, what took so long? And you just see a disheveled rat man voiced by Jackie Chan.
I avoided the trailers for this movie, so I vaguely was aware of the direction they were going with him. I didn't realize how hard they were going with the direction they went with Splinter. So this was like a surprise.
I only saw the first teaser. That was it. So that was 100% the only thing I knew about it going into the movie. So I just knew that he was the voice, and I was like, well, okay, I get it. Like, to have the Kung Fu Panda connection. All right, fine.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's like the third time I think they've done an animated movie together. So maybe more than that. I'd have to look, but
well, I think Jackie Chan only voiced Monkey in the first Kung Fu Panda, because I know at a certain point a voice double took over. I don't know if that was in the later, because I know they did in the TV show. Jackie Chan was not going to show up for the TV show, but I feel like
no, the TV
in the
show,
movies,
no one's in that. So
I feel like one or two are, and they're the people where it's like, yeah, no, it makes sense that you're coming back. But yeah, no, Jack Black's not even in that one.
Yeah.
To the best of my knowledge. But yeah, no. Jackie Chan's playing a Splinter that is I don't know if you've seen this clip, but have you seen the thing where Bobby Lee talks about his dad?
No,
there's a bit
I don't
where
think so.
Bobby Lee talks about his dad on his podcast, and it was like how his dad would blame him for like his relatives dying for like anything, like minor infractions. He's like, you killed your grandpa or something like that. And that was all I could think about as I was watching this version of Splinter, because he's very much like a stereotypical dad who just wants to protect his kids. He has kind of like an immigrant father vibe where he wants to protect his kids from the nasty, mean, bigoted world outside. But he's like very much not a cool, wise kung fu master type like we get, like the what is his name from the live action ones, Kevin, the Elmo dude. Kevin Clash. We don't get like the wise Kevin Clash, or even the like fat kung fu master one that we got from like the Rise of the Teenage Mutant Turtles. This one's just he's just a dad. And when we get the flashback, it's weird how he looks like he's playing Tony Shalhoub rat, and Tony Shalhoub was the voice in the live action ones. It was just such a weird, like, I couldn't tell what angle they were going with the design of young Splinter, where they gave him like a Mario mustache.
Yeah, I mean, it's, to be quite honest, it's all wrong. It's all gross.
I mean, it's inaccurate to the source material, but honestly,
well,
Splinter was my favorite thing about this movie.
It's just like, there's all these mutants, everything makes sense to the story, and then there's this fucking rat man who's just like, it's like he just showed up for the wrong movie. And it's just, and I love Jackie Chan, but Jackie Chan doesn't give a fuck. Like, he does not give a fuck.
It's funny, I thought this performance was surprisingly good compared to like what he does when he shows up in Kung Fu Panda, where it's like, yeah, you literally just like directed him how to say lines. I don't know how much they focus on getting him to hit certain beats, but like, I didn't think he did a bad job as Splinter. I thought he had some of the funnier moments.
Job. It's just like, they were like, okay, we got Jackie Chan for the voice. They're like, what do we do with him? And they're like, well, nothing. Just have him be an overprotective dad for kids that live in the sewer. You know, it just, anyway, I think we went on a tangent on this. I don't even remember where. So they go home, they get busted by Splinter.
Yeah.
Because Leo rats them out, and then so the brothers don't want to talk to Leo, and they get grounded for a month or 2 months or something.
We also get a quick flashback of the origin story, which is more or less the same as the normal one, except we have, at one point, Splinter tried to take the kids up when they were really young to the surface. Like, he did give it an honest try to be like, you know what, we will go up here and we will go out, and I am a rat person and I've got these little gross.
He's a bad rat dad though, because he's just like, he goes to fucking Times Square, he's just like, you guys were obsessed with fucking lights and flashing lights, so I just took you to fucking Times Square, and then I bumped into someone, and then they said excuse me, and I was like, well, we're not in New York, because that's not what happened there. They don't go, oh, excuse me, so sorry I bumped into you. They go, fuck you, I'm walking here. I mean, they don't actually say that, but there's no conversation. They're not just like, and they just nudge you back like, fuck you, fuck. So,
well, I mean, we get more into the depiction of New York City later, but yeah. And then they get into a scuffle. People chase them around. One of the kids nearly gets hit by a car, and then he takes them down. And he's like, yeah, we're never doing that again. I'll send my kids out for groceries because I'm not going to do it, but I'm really protective of them.
These sweatpants don't fit me so well anymore.
Oh, and then, yeah, this is worth kind of mentioning too, just in terms of the different take. So him training the kids to be ninjas is like a protective dad thing. And it's like a really weird, like,
It's like my kid's getting bullied. I'm going to put him in Taekwondo.
I'm
going to
give him a gun. Because he immediately gives these kids, like, swords. And you see these, like, clips of these tiny babies swinging, like, swords around and chopping through bows and throwing ninja stars. And it is kind of funny how horribly irresponsible it is while he's trying to be protective. But I did think, in terms of the subtle, the few strains of actual themes in this movie, I did kind of like that the kids being ninjas was him completely overreacting to the world outside. It's like, well, if I can't trust people outside, I'm going to make sure my kid can kill anyone in the world. And I thought that was funny.
Well, yeah, I mean, but again, it's just like my issue is when you change Splinter's origin, and in this case you changed it a lot, it starts making your Ninja Turtles origin less believable as well, because now their ninja skills are just from like TV and movies, and it's like, okay, well.
And they're actually good at it too.
Yeah,
they're
phenomenal.
They fuck up a little bit, but then they immediately follow it up with like extreme competency. And I did, exactly. It was cute, but it wasn't, you know, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I didn't want to draw too many comparisons to the Spider-Verse movies because I think there's been too much focus on that style of animation, meaning that it has to like either be a ripoff or dictating other stuff, because Mitchell's versus the Machines also had some of that influence in there, but it wasn't trying to be Spider-Verse.
That's the thing. And then that's, you know, both Jeff Rowe directed Mitchell's and wrote this one, or both of them too. Like, he co-directed Mitchell's, he co-directed this one, and yes, he comes from the Sony background where they were like, yeah, go for it. And yeah, Mitchell's has a kind of like a natural progression of the style that Spider-Verse broke free, or, you know, free from the traditional stuff. But it's like, there's a lot of years of animation that this guy is a part of that, you know, developed that style. I don't know. Like, when people kept seeing him as Spider-Verse, I was like, yeah, but it's, like, literally the Mitchells. Like, and to go into it, I actually kind of meant to bring this up earlier, is, like, it's an ugly style, and I feel like they're doing kind of an homage to how the very first issues of Ninja Turtles look. Like, the first issues of Ninja Turtles are ugly as shit. Like,
I was about
Eastman
to say,
and Laird were, like, they were not very good.
Yeah.
and like, they improve through practice and repetition, like all, you know, artists do. But it is just like, you know, I liked it because it looked kind of ugly and reminded me of original Ninja Turtles. But like, that was for older fans. That's not for the kid. Like, my kids were like, yeah, cool, whatever, it looks like Ninja Turtles. So.
Yeah, the lumpiness of the designs, a lot of the shapes of the characters are distinct in a way that's like classic first-year animation rules about silhouettes and making sure that characters are distinctly recognizable even if you take away all the details. So, like, the Outram woman, where she's got, like, a head that's misshapen.
Or various other, weird and fucked up.
Yeah, where it's fucked up like an intentional way. That's not very Laird and Eastman. But what I did notice in that first scene when the soldier's driving, and one of the very first shots of the movie, they all have these like really big eyes that are not usually what you would draw on a like big muscular character. Usually you want like little tiny eyes to make them like look more meaty. But it did remind me a lot of those early Ninja Turtles things. I was like, that feels like they're really trying to, not the whole movie, but occasionally have those like little stabs of like, yeah, this is kind of sketchy, ugly, intentionally like kind of gross style that those early comics fell. And it didn't mimic it one to one, but it put it in there when it mattered. And it was actually like, it felt like a nice thing. Eastman's actually in the movie, if I remember correctly. Like he does a voice of a featured bystander later on. So because he's always been involved with this since like the originals. Like he's kept his fingerprint on everything.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, he'll jump in. He'll be involved. Like, I think the biggest he might still regret selling it, but I think he's enjoyed like the freedom and just being involved in it loosely rather than having to, you know, George Lucas the ship and keep it all going. You know, I get it. Like, that grind eventually wears off on you, where I'm just like, oh man, I can only be so responsible for this shit for so long before I'm just like, OK, Can I just have a cameo? Can I just do a cameo?
And just the one track of ideas too, because when you have a creator who's involved for so long, eventually they start repeating themselves, and
100%.
It's a lot better to bring in somebody who cares a shit ton. I mean, the original Ninja Turtles was them taking stuff that they liked and transforming it and tweaking it and kind of throwing their own, you know, stoner teenage twist on, you know, Frank Miller stuff. So having like a new generation, even though, you know, we're definitely not as indie or as hard scrap as those guys were, having some, you know, new creators who have maybe a completely different appreciation for the property, because this movie is not, I mean, I'll say that about most of the Ninja Turtles properties recently. They are not afraid to do things that are radically different while not losing the essential spirit of the property. And that is very, very hard to do with any of this shit.
Yeah, I think if there's any franchise, I think is very successful at that, because, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, that's not mine. Or, you know, I've kind of gotten over that in my age of just like, you just kind of get to a point where you realize, well, it's not for me. I can either enjoy what they've done with it or just enjoy the shit that I had before. That's
I want to embarrassingly defend something that is being sold to someone else? Because it always grows. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's like, this is the second or third, you know, because my son got to experience the early 2000s TMNT show on, you know, like on streaming. So it's like, this is his third iteration already, you know, and he still just enjoys each one, you know, for what it is. And it's just like, you know, and maybe it's through the scope of his eyes where I got to see, like, yeah, this is just for him. Like, he doesn't give a fuck. He's not like, this is different than the last two. He was just like, this is fun. Like, you know, and but Turtles for me, other than the Michael Bay ones, which I just loathed because of the man and what he did with them and just how god awful they were as films in general, I've always just been intrigued to see, like, well, what are you going to do different? You know, like, what are you going to keep? What are you going to, like, tweak and stuff? I feel like Splinter's origin is the one thing I would have tweaked a lot differently in this. I'm not saying it had to be the same. I'm not saying he had to be a Rokosaki. Like, I'm just saying Rat Dad is just, I'm not a fan of Rat Dad. I'm just like, Rat Dad, get the fuck out of here. Put some pants on, god damn it. Stop making out with that cockroach. It's disgusting. But
how did he get that Chris Pine? He's not willing to go out for groceries, but he was willing to go find a full-size Chris
the
Pine
biggest
standee.
Fucking internet joke. He's just like, I got all the Chris's. It's just like, I was like,
he's the best Pine.
He's the best Chris. And I was just like, Jackie Chan, stop. Stop making that joke. We didn't forget the part where they are Superfly's gang, or the people he's hiring out for gangs, are stealing scientific equipment and whatnot, but that doesn't really matter because the turtles are free. They're cutting loose again. They're making internet videos that they're not going to release on the internet. And
they had phones, and I was like, so do they have social media accounts? Like, what are they doing on their phones if they're not texting? Or, like, it would be really funny if they were, like, catfishing people for, like, friendship, where they were pretending to be, like, kids in different school districts or something like that. Yeah. But they never really clarify what the kids do with their phones.
Well, I want to say they kind of took that from Rise of the TMNT, because there are a lot of, like, Rise elements, I feel, in this. Because in that one, they had their own phones. And they just were messaging each other. Like,
and Raphael has the same headband thing, which I think... Yes. Came from the Michael Bay one. I think that's the first one where Raf was portrayed having that headband look, or the do-rag kind of over the eyes.
Yeah. But it works better in these ones. So
yeah.
And then I don't know what they're doing with the phones either. But so we haven't really seen Superfly's gang. I'm just spoiling it and telling you it's Superfly because it's so obvious. It's just like, he's called Superfly. We saw a baby fly. Like, my kid was like, is that the fly? And I was just like, yeah, it's the fly in the beginning. He's just like, all right, cool. Like, it wasn't lost on him. He was just like, yeah, just verify some facts. I was like, yeah, you can. He was like, okay. But, and so the turtles, they meet April. Leo falls in love. Yeah, they nearly kill her. She has, like, the best helmet in the world, though.
Yep.
And while she's yelling at them in typical New York fashion, a guy steals her scooter and drives away on it because, like, check your shit, otherwise it's getting stolen. And then they decide, Leo's like, let's go beat that guy up and get her shit back. And the others reluctantly follow. But they're just like, all right, well, you know, he's encouraging us to stay out later. Why not?
How do you feel about April being like an explicit love interest, but like instead of doing the weird creepy, like all of them are kind of in love with her thing? Because I thought it was interesting that they just made her specifically Leonardo's love interest.
Didn't really. So the thing is, in like the 2003 one, they had Donnie like hardcore crushing after her.
Isn't Mikey usually the one?
Not really. I don't really think any of the other ones they've had an explicit like crush on her. The original cartoon show, definitely not. I mean, the movies, they're all just kind of like, April's cool, she feeds us pizza, you know? They were there was
that childlike really, innocence.
Yeah, exactly. There's not really like a hint of romance there. But then like then that 2003 one, because they were the same age, and Donnie and her were into the same like computer geekdom shit, like they really developed them as like a love story there. And then on that one, they had Shredder's daughter, also the same age as them, or, well, I shouldn't say Shredder's daughter. And that one, it was Shredder's daughter raised, or it was Splinter's daughter raised by Shredder. And she was, and Leo were a love interest between each other. So, and then in Rise, they were just all friends again. Like, they were, none of them were explicitly like love interests or anything. So, having it be Leo's this time around, I was just like, oh, that's fine, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
It didn't really bother me. I mean, it was kind of creepy. Like, I liked the prom line at the end when she's just like, just as friends, though, right? And he's just like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, you're still a giant fucking turtle, man. Like, you're a mutant turtle. You're just going to have to wait like Shredder did, or you're going to have to date that fucking bat, who I guess is like a weird aunt now. I don't know. So
I think it worked in part because another thing I really appreciate about this movie is it feels like at a certain point that's coming up real soon, this movie gave me like really strong, like, oh, this is kind of like a, not to just do the Seth Rogen thing, but a super bad for kids kind of setup where it's kids in trouble. Like it's kids getting in over their head and having the like schoolboy crush on the female love interest and having that like kind of moment and having that drive his character in that way felt very like innocent and kiddie. Like it never got creepy. They never did too much with it. Yeah. It just was like, oh, he's like hardcore crushing on this person and they're very genuine boy feelings. Like,
yeah, exactly.
They're not sexual. There's nothing sexual about it. He's just like, oh, I bet she's like really charming and smart and intelligent and really sweet.
And I think that's like one of the most relatable things. Cause I think that is something that like just generally most people can relate to, is like you having just like crush / romantic feelings that don't explicitly tie into your hormones or sexuality. It's just more of like, I just generally really fucking like that person. And you're just like,
hyper
and it's like, why? And it's like, I have no fucking idea. Just things clicked and I'm in love. So,
and I felt like that fed into that really nice core of this movie where it's like, these are kids. We're not going to do, was Seth Rogen involved in that movie where it's like, all the kids, and it was just sold on the fact that they were all swearing like they were in Superbad, kids or whatever. It never kind of did that thing where it's like, we're going to have these kids be as like raunchy and cursed the way the adults are. It felt like, no, these kids are in over their head, and like Ice Cube swearing in a way kind of made it feel like that was the dividing line between the adult world and them. Like, he's up here and he's throwing around PG level curses, but because everyone else is being pretty tame, it feels like, oh yeah, because like these kids are not ready to be involved in this genocidal mutant man, but we'll get to that.
And just kind of to go through this next part. So they go, they follow the person who stole the scooter. They break in, they kind of reveal themselves to these thugs. And then they go through their first fight, piss poorly for the most part. And then they, you know, leave April's scooter there. She comes in like she's never lived a day in New York in her life. She's
right.
Like, innocent civilian just here to reclaim what's mine that you clearly stole, but like, whatever. And then she finds them hiding very poorly in the shadows. And then they just, I think, just get pizza on a roof. And that's a layered reference there. It's like layered apartments or something.
Oh, is it? I didn't even notice that.
I didn't notice until I watched this goddamn trailer, like, looping on IMDb, like, 100 million fucking times. And I was like, oh, there it is. So, and she starts kind of, she reveals she's a journalist at her high school. Prom has been canceled because of the crime wave, which I don't think since the first live action movie has it ever felt like New York was dangerous. This one had almost a feel of it being dangerous, and almost until the turtles show up, and then the turtles kind of make it seem not so dangerous anymore, because it's just like, oh, it just comes a little too goofy. But at first, when they were like, you know, they were reporting on the crime wave and everything, and how it was dangerous, I was like, hey, you know, that's actually like pretty reminiscent of how, you know, the first movie felt and everything. But
yeah. Aesthetic is dirty as compared to like the Michael Bay ones, where the end fight is on top of a glistening skyscraper in broad daylight, which for an, considering how many movies that are heavy on CGI want to like put things in darkness because it makes CGI look better, they really did kind of like fuck up the aesthetic for what a Ninja Turtles movie should look like, which is this, where it is dirty and grimy, and you have those
and
like Blade Runner-esque gigantic wall new screens, where I was just picturing, like, imagine being in the apartment across the way trying to sleep, but thinking about that person trying to sleep while somebody's talking about all of the murders, mutant murders that are going on, made me go like, oh yeah, that actually does fit a comic book feel very well. That would be horrible, and I would not want to live in that nasty mutant overrun city.
And so yeah, they basically introduce themselves, and they part ways, and Leo covers for them for once when they go back to Splinter instead of just spilling.
He's got
the
a reason now.
Yeah, he's got a reason. He's in love. He's got feels.
Yeah.
And then the next night, they call April because Donnie got the contact info, and then Leo wanted it, and they have like a funny, a very Seth Rogen moment, like his very knocked up feeling of them all talking at the same time, and like others saying things that's like fucking up the conversation. And they agree to meet with her, and she's like, "Do you guys have ears?" They're just like, "Just say yes, just say yes."
I think
like
so.
Little shit like that. Yeah,
and and she writes down, and I like this detail. They think they have ears, and I like to believe that was more her going like, "This is the internal psychology of the turtle. They want to believe they have ears."
So it's just little shit like that. I definitely, like, I wish I remembered more of the jokes and whatnot, but I definitely laughed, like, a lot. My kids laughed a lot, too. Like, they just, you know, like, the humor hits, and I accredit that to the directors, because I think that's just very reminiscent of their styles. But also, the four voice actors, like, they were really good. Like, I enjoyed their performances.
They could have been super annoying being,
kids
dropping modern slang and talking about, like, how awesome. You could have had a movie where they were just constantly talking about how awesome it is to be a ninja. Oh, did you see that and that thing? They don't do that shit.
Could have been those kids.
Yeah, they don't do that. They make them kind of feel like they live in being Ninja Turtles in a way where it's like, this isn't. The only things that are impressive to them are things that they don't experience regularly. And
exactly.
I appreciated that.
So they come up with a plan with April. I think they go to the high school.
They do.
It's been high, of course.
Oh, boy. I missed a lot of these references.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I noticed that one while watching it, because they brought it up. Or, like, she said it twice, I think. And then I saw the sign or whatever. And then they go in, and they're just in awe of high school. She's like, so is this everything you thought it'd be? And they're just like, oh, it's fucking awesome. And then Michelangelo sees the improv sign up, and he's like, oh, you need a first and a last name. And so he divides
his name.
Yeah. And then they divide Leo's, because they just rag on Leo, because why wouldn't they? He's like cost them so much personal freedoms and stuff, and is always brown nosing to Rat Dad that it's just like, I mean, I would totally, he'd be the ousted brother for sure. Leonardo, his last name's Nardo, and he tries to fight them. He's like, well, at least I'm not Puke Girl. That's a horrible name. And then, of course, Puke Girl turns out to be April, who had her own viral video where she puked on camera and was remixed over and over.
She's got stage fright, and she's apparently been made internet famous. And we get a bit where, she's like projectile vomiting green ooze.
Oh, it was so, it was good. It was good vomit. Like,
well, she's actually being like propelled around the room. Like, she's just like flowing with it. Like, it's a rocket jet coming out of her face.
And then we see some of the remixing. And so she's trying to, so her, and this is what I like, is that they establish kind of like these dual motivations for them. Right. April's is that she's going to use the turtles to get prom uncanceled so that she is the hero of the school and they'll stop calling her Puke Girl. That is her motivation.
Yeah.
She does not genuinely care if the turtles, whose goal is to integrate with society as she's, you know, pitched it to them by being heroes and bringing Superfly to justice, thus ending the crime wave and the fear. That's what she presents them. And they're like, we'll do that because if that gets us to be heroes in everyone's eyes and then we integrate in society and we don't get milked by TCRI, which is a running joke.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah, we should have mentioned the running milking joke.
He's like, you want to be milked? Huh?
They're going to milk you.
He's like, I don't even have nipples. And just over and over and over.
Yeah.
But it was great. He's like, what is that machine? Hmm? And they're just like, no, that's just nothing. He's just like, oh, mega milker? See, I told you. That's the only time fucking Rat Dad saved it. He's just like, what's that machine? But again, it was just more of just like his stupidity of being just like
that it's actually called a milking machine. Like, he's been using this phrase and then everyone uses it. But we have the very faint themes in this movie is this idea of like of trying to, because the turtles are kind of like introduced this thing was like the only reason they're going to be heroes is not because they're necessarily like at no point up until a certain point are they motivated by just being good people. They have this kind of like mercenary kind of thing where it's like, oh, people like us, like April would have been grossed out by us if she didn't know that we were helping her out and doing something for her. So we'll just do something for everyone in New York City. And then everybody will just suddenly like us.
And that kind of,
it's a good idea for their motivation.
It's what kids would come up with.
Yeah.
You know, because what kid is, you know, and granted, we have all these superhero movies and stuff, but not, like a lot of kids aren't just like, oh, yeah, I want to go out and do all the dirty work to be the hero, you know? No, they want the powers and the Flash and all that shit. They don't really understand, like, no, you're going to spend, like, every night, like...
And they are basically like the X-Men, where they're hated and feared, but they do hero shit. And that's a hard line to kind of justify. So it was actually a pretty good idea to give them this sort of, like, exchange ideas. Like, we'll be heroes so we can be... well-liked. We can be not hated and have people throw shit at us when they see us. And I thought that was a good idea for a motivation.
And there's no like long-term plan for being heroes. It's just we'll get integrated in society and then we're good. We're done. You know?
Right. No one will ever like double think that one thing we did.
Yeah. And so this begins, they go back to the people that they took down and then they ask them for information and then they find out there's like these, five criminals they have to find. So they start going through, you know, we see a bunch of like, you know, fight sequences and stuff. No Diggity is the song playing the entire time. And then they eventually find out they're like, oh, okay, it's this fifth guy that we got to find. They get to that fifth guy and he's like, we're doing an exchange with Superfly. He's basically, he kills everyone. If you fail or whatever, he just kills you, you know? So we got this final part so he doesn't kill us. And they're like, okay, we'll do the drop off for you.
And up until this point, I assumed by because it was a kid's film, I thought, oh, he's turning the people who he sees him into mutants. Because in some of the past things, the mutants have been like human beings that have been augmented with animal things. But we find out that's not the case. So he probably was just straight up murdering people.
PG, I don't get it. And I do want to touch on that because my son asked me, he was like, well, why are the turtles look like that? But all the other people had to have like human stuff or whatever, you know, like. And I guess in this one, they kind of don't do that. They're all just mutated animals. But he was like, but he had remembered in the other ones was like, but oh, yeah, but Splinter was like a guy and then he became like a rat. And I was like, well, yeah. Yeah, don't look for logic, okay? Just like the turtles are the only ones that didn't need a human to be a part of it, okay? Basically, as that guy just fucking murders my audio because he's just like an asshole who lives here somewhere. Sorry. I was like, don't look for logic outside of that. It's just, you know, it's what worked for the story and what.
Yeah, all of these are capsules. Like you can't. I mean, he's a kid, so obviously he is going to kind of like have that thing where his brain's trying to network this to other things. But
exactly,
I do appreciate how he's all like, yeah, you know, how he's experiencing.
You know, this doesn't make sense to kids.
Right,
you have to kind of be like, fucking, I don't know, just move on. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, because that is an interesting thing. How early on when they just jumped 15 years later, I was like, oh, are we just not going to show the origin because they're assuming everyone who's coming to see this movie knows the story? And then they do cover the origin. But for a moment, I thought they were doing the Batman thing where it's like we've seen that before. Well, but for little kids, this could be their very first Ninja Turtles movie.
Well, and what I've learned is like, you know, my kids, when they watched the new Spider-Mans, the Spider-Man movies, they weren't like, how do you become Spider-Man? Like, they either fucking read a little book that I read to them and knew it or didn't care. They're just like, yeah, Spider-Man, I don't care. Spider-Man just needs to exist, you know?
Right.
And that's it, you know?
They don't need another actor crying over an elderly actor dying in the street to understand that this character will kick people in tights.
Yeah.
But yeah, sorry. So we have Superfly show up and it's Ice Cube, even though I didn't recognize him. And not only Ice Cube, but like every one of the mutants that have been advertised in the movie. Like, this isn't a slow rollout. They're literally just all there as his like gang, his posse are all there, and it's greatest hits. And then I think the one Paul Rudd's playing is like kind of an ironic. I'm not the biggest Turtles fan. I have very scattershot thing.
Mondo, just picture the Turtles were such a thing of their time. You know, they're ninjas. They rode skateboards and shit. And then you have Mondo Gecko show up, who was this like peak 90s everything. And then
was
just,
he a
like,
toy first?
Maybe
he feels a toy first kind of thing.
Like a lot of the original ones were just toys and then integrated into the show, you know, just like that tie-in of like, well, okay, what do you got next? And like Mondo Gecko was definitely that. I mean, he definitely looks a lot less shitty now. Like, I had the toy and I still have several of the toys. Yeah, he's peak just 90s like trash. Where you're just like he's the Poochie, I would say.
Sure, yeah.
Part based off of Mondo Gecko, like,
and he's played that way in this movie too. Like, Paul Rudd's definitely. It's funny because Mondo Gecko bonds with Michelangelo, even though like Mondo Gecko's personality in this movie is kind of what Michelangelo is in some of the older properties, because they took out his surfer thing from the original cartoon show.
And there's some like falling out with Splinter as well, with the pines and everything, and before they go to a meeting or whatnot. And then
because he thinks that they're just obsessed with the human world and he's going to like humor them by having a human night, kind of, where he's doing this weird he's like, I am the waiter. You can order anything you want. It has to be pizza. That line made me laugh. But yeah, he's trying to like, there is something in this movie where there is definitely like, with the bigotry themes, a like race analogy that doesn't totally play all the way through, especially how the movie ends. But I did appreciate that it did color some of the interactions in an interesting way and did make the situation of the turtles feel more sympathetic, because they aren't just kind of like kids who are just like Ariel in The Little Mermaid, where it's like, I just want to be part of that world. You get a real sense of like, no, their lives kind of suck. Like, they have stuff, but like their lives feel dirty. I mean, the sewer is not presented as fun. It's not like in the live action movies where by the end of it, it just seems like a cool party hangout base. In this movie, like it feels like a miserable existence.
They have like a, you know, like a 9,000 square foot apartment in New York that they're not paying for.
And just exactly. Like, yeah.
Free electricity in their own little areas and all this other shit. So, yeah. And then so they do the Superfly exchange, and then they, you know, somehow end up going bowling. I forget exactly how that.
Well, he invites them along because the kids are like, shit. He's like, we're supposed to be stopping this.
Cousins. Yeah.
Yeah. I've never met another mutant before. And now there's a shit ton of them, and they all seem to be like weird, crazy, interesting people. And that was another fun thing talking about, like the kind of like race analogy thing, where it's like, oh shit, I didn't realize there was a world outside that did reflect me in some way. And of course that kind of like bites him in the ass in a moment, but for this moment you can kind of see that moment where it's like, oh, I completely forgot what I was doing. I had this whole mission and now it's out the window because my fucking world just got turned upside down. And I liked how that was portrayed in this.
I mean, because like Mikey and Mondo bond, and then Wingnut and Donatello bond. And
I missed that. Raph, I only got the Mondo thing.
Oh, yeah. And Raph and Bebop and Rocksteady bond. He's like, I've never met anyone as angry as me. And they're just like, we're angry about everything. And like Seth Rogen tries to do his best New York accent, but it just sounds like Seth Rogen doing a New York accent. You're just like, God, Seth Rogen, just stop. You should not have been Bebop.
Were you surprised by how little they talk in this movie? Because Bebop and Rocksteady get like almost no dialogue.
And I already knew that John Cena was Rocksteady, but like, I was like, did he talk at all? Or I feel like
he does, but I think they treated his voice because it felt like they digitally pitched down.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, for the handful of lines that he actually does, and it's very weird. It is that obnoxious, like, we needed the poster with the shit ton of names on there.
Yeah.
And in most, almost all cases, it's completely wasted. Like, Paul Rudd as Mondo Gecko is fun for the very little screen time that he gets. But I at least could imagine a kid walking out of the theater being like, I like Mondo Gecko. Most of the rest of them is like, they're there because it'll make a nerd on the internet happy that they took their favorite mutant and like, threw him up in this really weird way.
Like, Ray Filet is no one's coming away being a Ray Filet fan. Like, I kind of honestly hated him.
Sure.
Like,
I forgot he was there.
Was like, exactly. Cause he was just so annoying. I was just like, okay, you weren't like the best, but like, at least in like Mute Animals, you did like some shit. You were okay. But like, this is shitty. Like, why are you so tiny and shitty? And, like, I didn't even know it was Post Malone. I was like, why did they even, I don't know, whatever. Just whatever. But
Hannibal Buress could write a stand-up bit about how little he has to do in this movie. Like, he is like, literally just a name to throw on the poster.
Yeah. I was like, did they pay him per the word? He was like, I want to be paid by the word, like Schwarzenegger. And they're like, okay, well, that's going to bite you in the ass. You get three. So, enjoy. Here's $50. Get out of here, kid.
You're getting like, Eric Andre show rates for this.
He's like, I left that show. Well, you should. That was a pretty steady gig. You should have kept it. You know? Like, whew. But,
so they go bowling. And then it's time to
oh, he reveals their plan, which is he's going to mutate all the animals because he's got his dad's scientific mind. And they're like, oh, what about the humans? He's like, yeah, they're going to, like, be dead or food or entertainment or pets. You know, they're just, you know. Just
everybody gets an idea. They all get to chuck in their ideas of what to do with the humans.
Yeah, and so then they're just like, oh, great, they're on their way. And then so they decide to drive the van, and April's just like, am I going to be recording you guys, giving them the final piece? Like, what's going on here? So... and they're in the back of the van talking, whispering, and God, I can't remember what song comes on, but Mondo Gecko and everyone starts singing it, and then...
Oh, fuck, yeah, I've forgotten too.
Oh, man, it was a good song. It was like a funny song for them to be singing, and I can't remember.
Because it wasn't like another 90s rap song.
Yeah.
Shit.
It's gonna
regardless,
bother me.
They're all singing, and it's...
Yeah.
Yeah,
and then Donnie hits the brake and sends them all flying, because why the fuck would mutants wear seatbelts, you know? And I like this part, because then all the other mutants start, like, hitting the van and telling them, like, hey, dude, just give us the shit, because we're much nicer than Superfly. Like, when Superfly gets here, we are going to back out, and just, it is what it is at that point. And I like that, because it's like, they didn't want to hurt them either. They liked them too. Like, that wasn't like a one-sided street and that they're just like, we're the bad guys. It was more of like, you know, and I think they voiced that well later on. It's like, we did bad because we were scared of this guy. And this guy said, you're doing the bad shit. And we're like, okay, we're doing the bad shit. But it wasn't like they were genuinely bad mutants, you know, like kind of like the first cartoon, like most of the cartoon shows do, where there's just like, oh yeah, here's the villain of the week. Here's the villain of the week. It was just more of like, we're mutants too. We had a different upbringing. We were raised as a family as well. He was our older sibling, and so we just went with what he said, but we don't necessarily agree, you know. And we're growing as ourselves and want to not be, you know, bad mutants essentially. Which I think was a nice change. Like, you know, Bebop and Rocksteady not necessarily being bad guys was okay with
me. Yeah. Well, it's a very kid-friendly take, but it doesn't, because they do have Superfly be like a genuine character who's like cursing and killing people. Yeah. They have that hard edge, so you don't feel like, oh, this is the Pound or the Paw Patrol version of Ninja Turtles by making the other characters like more friendly. Instead, it does kind of tie in to the overall theme of being about like acceptance and having Superfly just be like, yeah, this is the far end of the spectrum where it's like, I do not care about any other perspective. I have too much pain. I'm going to kill everyone. And they do, I think, a pretty okay job at not working too hard to make him overly sympathetic, but making him understandable enough and understand that, like, yeah, he has a reason to do what he does, even though he's like, what he's trying to do is unforgivable. And I thought that was like a good line to take for a kid's film that isn't going to dig too deep into these themes.
Well, and they do a great job, because Splinter has very much the same, or Rat Dad has the same take. Like, he even says a lot of the same words, and then later on he repeats them, and it's like, you know, Splinter hears his own words coming back at him from someone he doesn't love or appreciate or respect, and he understands, that's what my kids have heard this whole time, you know? And I think that was good too. But just to speed it up a little bit so we're not droning on too much. So, you know, Superfly gets the part. He tells him, like, I thought you guys were cool. Like, you know, whatever. And then TCRI kidnaps the turtles. Superfly and his gang get away with the part. And so you're just like, uh-oh, you know, more to come. They begin milking the turtles, and they like, they keep having Moser like, try to think of something else. Like, what do you want? Like, think of pizza. He's like, oh, now I'm thinking about cheese, and cheese is made out of milk, and I'm being milked, and it's all bad again. And then April goes and finds Splinter, and he's afraid of her. She's afraid of him because he's a fucking giant rat still. And she's just like, your kids need you. And so then he infiltrates TCRI and with all their weapons and stuff, and, you know, beats some ass and just kind of does. I mean, it's really like, it's very Jackie Chan, like, to be
obligatory comedy character does the kung fu you didn't expect them to, even though the character is voiced by a kung fu legend.
Yeah, exactly. So and then he saves him, he gets him out, and they're like, we have to go stop Superfly. And so that's when they head over to his, I don't know, shipwreck barge thing on Staten Island. And I think during this, we also get a moment where Ray Filet's singing a sad song. And then Superfly's like, if I wanted to be sad, I'd be sad. So stop singing sad shit. Yeah. and they're all just kind of like, you know, down and out. Like, they're just like helping with the plan, but you could like just feel that they're not really down with this plan anymore. And then the turtles show up, and then they give a, you know, Leo gives a rousing speech, that, you know, like, join us, not him type of thing. And they all start fighting Superfly, who's pretty fucking OP on all of them. You know, it's just, it takes a lot of them. And I think they, you know, they eventually do it, and then he falls into the ooze in the ocean, and he becomes Super Superfly, and he mutates to a whale and goes into like a zoo, and then just mutates with a bunch of animals, and it just becomes the most grotesque thing I've seen in a while. He has like a leg made out of horses. He has a just an awkward giraffe on his face.
Yeah, the giraffe nose.
I couldn't
knows.
Stop looking at it. I was just like, God, that's so awkward.
He's very the thing or society where they just start smashing shit together. And whoever got the job to design Super Superfly must have just been like, he must have been the favorite of everybody, where it's like, oh yeah, you're going to get the cool job.
Yeah, he's just like, I'm going to put fucking giraffe awkwardly there. They're like, we love it. I mean, we hate it, but we love it.
He's literally just a kaiju stomping around downtown New York, smashing into buildings. He doesn't even seem to like have any. His plan kind of got thrown out the window when the machine got destroyed. And now he's just like one by one, kind of like killing humans and just mad with power.
And so now Splinter has, you know, he's heard his same words used against him. He's like, we got to go save the people, go be the heroes. And then, you know, and the turtles are like, we want to be heroes. We don't give a fuck about being liked. We just want to stop that guy, you know, like, we created that shit, we're going to fix that shit type of thing. And then so everyone's just all hands in. Big action sequence. Lessons are learned. They're defeated. And then the people. Oh, and then April goes down to Channel 6. She gets over her camera fear a little bit. She still pukes some. Which was great. I was just like, she still puked. But
the PG movie makes an Attack on Titan reference as the solution to the,
which
is,
I was just like,
wild to me.
I was like, listen, hot take, everyone. It's an overrated show. Okay, you can follow me on Let's Anime to hear me just bash the shit out of that show all the time. But yeah, it was wild to make. And so they were like, we're going to drop the anti-mutagen thing into his blowhole, which is just a giant ooze bucket. It was just quite disgusting. I was like, where's TCRI to just go there and then to gobble up all that that ooze? They should have been all on top of that shit.
I did really appreciate how gross they went. They didn't go like Osmosis Jones gross, where they felt like, other than like a handful of things, like April's motivation being not puking like a rocket ship. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I did like where it's like, yeah, we're going to have the monster, the mutants look gross. We're going to have most things look gross. And that felt very like 90s kids, you know, the molds where you'd make eyeballs or bugs, the creepy crawly stuff. It had that vibe while not feeling like it was pushing it so far that it was going to actually like be distasteful to watch. And the Super Superfly was like the perfect apex of like, yeah, I'm watching this on the big screen in a theater and just seeing these horses struggling about. I think that joke was supposed to be horseshoes, but yeah.
Oh, that was terrible.
I think that's what it was supposed to be, but they didn't lampshade it. So they do drop the anti-mutagen in the blowhole, and Superfly dies. All of these animals kind of turn back into the animals they were before, but I don't remember. I think he gets crushed, doesn't he?
I'm trying to remember. I don't actually.
I think some shit falls on him after he's like walking out, and he's like, "Oh, you think this is over?" And then it's over. So,
yeah. And then New York cheers for the turtles. They Splinter finds love. The cockroach lady, who pukes on everything as well, and they're just like, "Oh, that's weird and like kind of gross. Don't ever do that again." And it's just like, "Oh, here's three more times before the movie's over." The mutants all come and live as a family in the sewers, and they get to go to school for the first time. They walk in the doors. I don't know what Leo's dressed as. He looks like tech support for a struggling company or something. And they go through their high school. They kind of go through the different beats of April and Leo are doing their thing. They're looking into TCRI.
I thought they were setting it up to be like the next movie is going to be their high school. But I actually thought it was really cute that they actually put a button on this and go like, no, we're going to show you prom. We're not going to make the next movie be the lead up to prom like Spider-Man Homecoming or something. Yeah. We're just going to do it. We're going to show you the happy ending for these characters. So if we don't get a second movie, I mean, we have one thing that'll kind of be a wrench in this feeling like a completely like closed book. But I kind of liked how they didn't feel the need to just be like, this is the sequel tease, guys. Next one's going to be all high school.
Yeah. And then, well, it does end with TCRI going, I guess they won't be that hard to find after all, because it's scanning them at prom and calling them like subject 1234.
Yeah.
And then, what's her face? Cynthia Utrom.
Yeah.
Is just like, bring me the Shredder. And then like Shredder's just like hanging out on a building or something. I don't know. And like the wind and the rain or something. And you're just like, oh, okay.
Yeah. How the fuck is Shredder going to fit into this world when we have the Bebop and Rocksteady that we have? It's such a hard thing to imagine a sequel where you have, after Superfly, Shredder is your next big bad. How do you fit him into the tone of this? Because it's hard.
He'll probably be a little slapsticky as well, is what I imagine. So
yeah. I guess we don't get any sense of how they're going to portray him. They just do a little silhouette. And Cynthia Utrom is obviously a reference to the Krang race. I thought that's what we were going to get the tease of. I thought we were going to have the reveal that like, oh, she's an alien and we're going to do that whole rigmarole, but instead Shredder tease because that's the bigger one.
Yeah, but I mean, that could still be that could still be an angle too, because like there was that one where Shredder was a Krang, probably the late 90s, early 2000s, right before Eastman sold it. It was like a Fox Kids thing where like Shredder
the hard edge one.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, like that, I didn't know that was the case. I've never watched that 2003 show.
That's the thing, is like, it's not bad. Like, if you like Turtles, it's really not that bad. But he was actually a Krang. Like, he was Krang. Krang and Shredder were one and the same in that one. So I mean, there could be something like that, or you know, who knows? I mean, she could still be an alien, because there was also the, you know, I keep going back to it, like the early the 2000 CG one, where the Krang were all in like human suits basically. And
I mean, that's how the original comic was. Like, I did not realize until I started going through the old comic that like, yeah, the Krang, the Utroms are in like issue 4 or 5. Like, they're really early on in the lore.
Yeah.
Because Shredder is already dead by the end of that first issue. So.
Well, spoiler, everyone. No, I'm joking.
Shredder dies a lot, everybody.
Yeah, he does a lot. He's, you know, but he never dies.
He's good
to come back. So,
but yeah, that's basically the credits. We get a really chill A Tribe Called Quest song, which I very much appreciated as the lead out of the movie.
It was a good fit.
Yeah, it was very gentle.
Yeah, you're just coming down from like the high of all the adrenaline and shit, and it's just like to go out instead of just being like. That's why I kind of like James Gunn shit, where it's just like, man, did you have to pick the most annoying, loudest, longest fucking song for your credits? Like, Jesus. Like, I gotta stay for some credits, man, to see your after credit shit, and I gotta listen to this bullshit? I don't want to do it, you know? But this was just like, yeah, here you go, just mellow. But, they're not showing anything. I mean, I don't know. I didn't stay till the very, very end.
Neither did I. I had someone cleaning up, and it was a late night, so I was like, I'm not gonna make you stand
there. See, I mean, if they come in... Yeah, if they come into cleanup, I know that means they know there ain't shit there, and I just get the
Oh, fire. That's fair, so, too. Yeah. Well, also, this person cleaning up in our theater, I literally saw her, like, sitting on the ground in the hallway outside, like, before I went into the movie. So I'm like, you're not having a great night. I'm going to get out of here so you can do your terrible job.
She's like, thanks, it is terrible. Like, that old man wet himself. He needs to pants.
Rat Dad was in here earlier.
Yeah, Rat Dad was in here, and the smell alone, you'll understand why he's dating a cockroach. Okay. That was funny when he was like, I had one friend, it was a cockroach, and then he got stepped in and it's like, I ate him.
Yeah, and they cut away before he actually see it, which made it funnier.
Yeah. But I mean, overall, like, funny. I don't think it's like a perfect movie by any means, but it's a it's a fun, enjoyable version. I mean, they do have another movie and I think they greenlit it for two more movies, supposedly. Or is it? I'm trying to remember. There's two seasons of a 2D animation show that they approved. So I'm sure that will be terrible. One. Yeah, because it's just like, okay, you're going to interfit it between these two, the two movies.
It could be good. Enough. I mean, Rise was more or less spun off of the Michael Bay ones, and that was completely tonally different. So maybe they'll do that here.
Yeah, but Rise had that whole, like, subworld of mutants and aliens, all that other, you know, crazy shit. So, but, yeah, I mean, it could work, but I don't know. I mean, I'm less interested in the TV show fitting in. I just hope it's just, like, entertaining, I guess.
And we've been having some real slow burns with box office returns this year. Like, Elemental, really early on, everybody on YouTube wanted to, you know, the people who cheer Disney failing at something, talking about, oh, this movie's the biggest bomb in Pixar's history, and it's slowly, accumulated. Because it's a really fucking busy summer. Like, Barbie and Oppenheimer have been destroying, and people still want to see movies that aren't that. And it's been kind of nice to see that we're not, for once we have a summer where it isn't all about your first week. Like, you can have a movie grow a little bit. So I'm hoping this movie is just going to keep growing. My takeaway from this is I do agree. It's not perfect by any means. It for me, this is a perfect splitting the difference between the two other animated movie experiences I had this year, where I had the just wild, crazy, excellently written, deeply human Across the Spider-Verse, where that's my favorite thing I've seen in theaters this year. I had an extremely positive time with it, where it made me want to go out and make things. Like, it was a great experience, and it was a creative wonder. And then the other end of the spectrum, where it was the Mario Brothers movie, where it was as plug in as possible. There was it was almost trying as hard as it could to do as little as possible to do anything new. And this felt like it was right in the middle, where you'd have characters super awkwardly just explain literally what you're seeing. But then you'd have these scattered moments where the film feels really human and feels very realized. And the kids have moments where you feel for them and you're like, oh, you're a character I like. The analogy I have is, like, it's like a bodybuilder that is only working on one part of his body. So he's got, like, one muscle set that looks amazing, is really strong, and then the rest of him is kind of scrawny and underdeveloped. And for this movie, it felt like they worked on some parts of the script really, really strong, and then everything else fell by the wayside. And especially kind of in the third act, it really starts to show.
Yeah.
Nobody, and when I said earlier that Splinter seemed like the only character in some ways that was developed in certain ways, Splinter was the only character who had to kind of work for his solution. At the end of the movie, nobody really kind of has, like, trouble solving the problems of the movie. They have things that get in their way. They don't always immediately succeed, but you don't really feel like they're working towards it when they win. Like, that final fight scene is so, like, oh, everybody's just kind of, like, helping out, and then they kind of beat the guy. There's no real sense of, like, tension or danger, because for the most part, every character just kind of fulfills their plot role. Like, April doesn't have to actually work hard to get her resolution. She just shows up in the place because she sees something's happening, does her bit, and then pukes a little bit. But she doesn't like have any of those moments that really like make you feel really satisfied when the character gets what they want. And Splinter, on the other hand, throughout the movie, they keep hitting these benchmarks where it's like, this is where the character's at. This is where the character's at. This is where the character's at. And then they hit him in the end. He's like, oh, and now he's changed. And you feel that path.
Whereas that's true.
Nobody else kind of gets that. And I wish the movie was a little stronger, but where Across the Spider-Verse was like almost alienatingly complex when it comes to kids, I felt this movie was the perfect tone for something that children could appreciate and didn't feel like it was speaking down to them. And that's why I hope this movie does well. I don't know how a sequel will work, but as a one and done, I thought this was one of the better animated films I've seen in a moment, especially theatrically. It wasn't Spider-Verse. I don't think anything really can be without people dying, but this was a really excellent experience in the theater.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I highly recommend it in the theater for if you're just looking to go to the theater. And if you're not, and you're just waiting for the home release, like that's fine, too. But I mean, it's good because, I mean, it only had a budget of $30 million, which is next to nothing for an animated film, I feel like, these days. But, like, for it to make $111 million, like, that's a good return, which is, I'm sure, why all that shit got greenlit. That and just Paramount / Nickelodeon don't have anything else going on. They will constantly put money into this franchise for the hope of it paying out. And just the action figure return already has been fantastic, I'm sure, for them. So they're just like, nah, we're good. Just do whatever. Like, I mean, that's the nice thing about Turtles is, like, since Nickelodeon has taken over, this is the third iteration. Like, it's just, you know, they just follow the Sony diagram of like, okay, how many years do you take a gap year? You do a 2 year? Okay, good. All right. And then they didn't really even do that with Rise because that CG or the Netflix one that they teamed up and were just like, just put on Netflix. I think it was last year or maybe 2000.
Yeah. I want to say it was last year.
So, I mean, you know, I mean, obviously that was probably delayed by COVID and everything, but I don't know, fun experience, but I mean, it's not my favorite Ninja Turtles, but it's not my least favorite by any means. I think it was a very solid reimagining that, like you said earlier, just continues that, like, just they somehow find that magic that keeps new people interested and appeases old generations, too. It's just, you'll never, you know, it's very much the only thing like Star Wars to have come after Star Wars.
If you're a kid and this is your favorite movie, I'm not upset about that. I shouldn't be upset at any kid having a favorite movie, but this is one of those things where when I was picturing kids looking back on their childhoods and having like a movie that stood out to them really hard, this might not be that for me as a cynical adult who's seen this story before, but I really like pictured like a kid having this be their Turtles and me going like, yeah. You get yours, Turtles.
Exactly, yeah. Well, that will do it for us. You can find Let's Movie, the podcast, hosted by Spotify. So you can go on Spotify. There's the extra little polls and questions, like Q&A that you can do of, like, what'd you think of the episode? And you can only do that on Spotify. Otherwise, you can listen to us on your favorite podcast provider, of course, because it's just how podcasts work. You can follow us on social media as well. Just look for Let's Movie Podcast or Pod, and you can find us pretty much anywhere or just not at all, whatever. You'll be responding with me, and I'm terrible at responding to people in a timely manner. I'll do the best I can. Maybe one day Justin will be like, let me take over on that shit. You're real bad at that. And I'll be like, all right, that's cool. But until then,
I'm so much fucking worse at that.
Okay, never mind. You're stuck with me, and there you go. So that's it. Justin, you want to take us out?
Cowabunga, I guess.
That was the perfect ending. Cowabunga.